You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. But wouldn't my cake and eat it too? Wouldn't it both ways? Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loosely abused ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get was bittersweet. It's like winning a used me. I'm blind cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm actually weirder than you think, cause
I'm friends with the monster.
Very good Thursday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good one. Weather dominates the news again. President made some news yesterday. You know, during the campaign I said, there's not a thing that comes out of his mouth that he won't change. And, you know, I don't know, I'm not that savvy to the rules of Washington, D.C. and how that game gets played, but, you know, if you're in it to make progress, then how do you sit around and just, you know, and watch the games that get played and say, yeah, it's okay. You know, there's part of me that, you know, does the president, what does he owe Mitch McConnell and the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan? I mean, you don't deliver on health care after you told me you would, after we put it to the front of the line. You know, what does he owe them? To continue to go down the path of do nothing? So I again, and now we're gonna play burn it down politics between the Democrats and the Republicans, because the Democrats want to force a longer extension than 3 months and yada yada yada. Okay, I guess, you know, if that's the game. So the I don't know. To me the president, you know, hey, let's get things done. I'm not going to stand here and have the nation screaming about our inability to enact disaster legislation because people want to play politics. And again, and the Republicans can say the Democrats, you know, are playing politics with it and we can break it off in their ass and all the rest of this stuff, but you're the President of the United States. Is that the debate that you want? Is that what you want to do? And so all this other stuff is going on, and you're standing there with two sides, unable to agree on anything, to play burn it down. So I don't blame him for getting something done. Delivering, at least able to deliver the debt ceiling and disaster relief. So Washington D.C. is, you know, and especially Congress, it's the most dysfunctional, in my opinion, group on the planet. And so, there's part of me that doesn't blame. You know, there's a wake-up call for you, boys. I don't care how I get it. Okay? If you guys don't want to play, then look, I'm going to find people to pass what I think is good shit. And so to me, I just, Donald Trump is not an ideophile. That's not him. He's a deal maker. There isn't one thing that he said during the whole campaign that he will not change, modify, or back away from. Not one. And, you know, and we all see that on an ongoing basis, that he's there to make a deal on taxes. He's there to make a deal on anything he can make a deal on to create progress. And so, again, he's a former Manhattan liberal, right, who evolved into a conservative. So it was a bit of an eye-opener yesterday when he talks about Chuck and Nancy. And he's obviously message sending to the Republican Party. No. I need progress from you. And so, I know that there's people that are conservatives that are just aghast. You know, his base and all the rest of this. Look, I think the American people are tired of that shit. Simply just tired of it. Can you go do the work that we want you to do? And the answer is, well, no, we don't have the votes to pass what he wants. So he puts a deal together to get it passed. So I think it's obvious to most everybody in the nation where the problem nationally is. It's in our Congress. And if our Congress can't compromise to do the things that they're supposed to do, then what does that leave us when nobody has a clear majority? It leaves you where we're at. Can't pass a budget, and then you certainly can't do anything relative to any issue of substance. So it's pretty pathetic. And in the midst of that, you see the president with strange bedfellows. But again, he's a deal maker. That's his gig. It's what he does. And so I think he was message sending yesterday. So that's interesting. Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Harvey, both in the news, watching video. And, you know, I tried to run down yesterday. We had James Baird on, sergeant in the Army, who got out. And so the Army found for him housing. But I can't find the program that it's associated with. So I'm waiting on, you want to tell his story, but I'm waiting on the people that kind of put it together to say, hey, where did this come from? Is this a local hook? Is this a national program? How did this happen? So, but again, VA doing good stuff down in the Houston area. And so, again, want to tell the story, but kind of waiting on it in order to footnote it appropriately. So James Baird came on yesterday and talked about he had 4 feet of water in his home that he had just paid off in the spring. And so going to school, And so he works where he goes to school. He works in the vet center. So he goes there, and, you know, and they're talking about what happened. And so a woman there takes his name and says, hold on, let me make some phone calls. He gets a phone call from a realtor and say, we have a house for you, $100 a month for 6 months, and at the end of it you can. So it was done by the VA. And so anyway, looking for more information on that. As soon as we get it, we'll pass it along. We'll talk news here. Grant Newsham's going to join us in about 15 minutes. Good morning to you.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We'll check the weather right now. Then we'll check some news headlines. Grant Newsham going to join us in about 11 minutes. See what he has to say about the latest. More of the same. The pictures from Hurricane Irma, man. Literally, it looks like somebody just. It looks like something out of Syria, where you see just urban just destruction. Currently sunny in 65 in Quantico. Mostly sunny. Actually, mostly cloudy in 68 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly sunny in Granbury, Texas, 65. Montana warmed up. Sunny in 52 in Big Timber, Montana. 29 Palms cooled down a little bit. Sunny 76 early in the morning. Camp Pendleton, cloudy in 63. Okinawa, cloudy dark in 85. Rocket cooled off 95 degrees there. Where opposition groups backed by the United States continue to make progress. The question is what comes after. It's clear and dark in Marja, 94 degrees there. At the home of All Marine Radio, 66 degrees under cloudy skies, looking for a high of 81 here in Southern California. We will take a break. I've got a couple emails about Donald Trump. We'll talk about that. I don't know, you know, what do you do with a dysfunctional country? Continue the dysfunction? You know? Is he just an extension of the dysfunction? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Should we get a Republican version of Barack Obama, reverse all the executive orders, skew it to the right, no progress, more executive orders? Is that better? I don't know. Pretty much sucks all the way around. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Bruce Springsteen singing about Brilliant Disguise. Let me read you an email here. Make no mistake about it, this was a shot across the bow of the USS Republican. I'm a conservative, and I'm not at all surprised. The Republicans' inability to follow through on their campaign promises when they control both houses and enjoy a sympathetic president is going to be their demise. They are going the way of the Whig Party. You know, again, here's the deal. I wish I could remember the soundbite. It was a Republican senator yesterday, and he talked about negotiating with the Democrats. He said it tends not to work out well. Yeah, well, no shit, okay? It's part of the political process. You want the Republican solution? Is that what you want them to sign on for? And so I just watched it, and I thought, you know, I'm sure these are smart guys, but it just... I know I'm not an inside baseball guy. I know, like the rest of the nation, I'm just standing here watching what we see. Okay? But Donald Trump, he's no stranger to playing the game. And he's played it at the highest level. And he's in a cage match. He gets blamed for everything. Right? Everything he does is racist. Okay? And you heard what he said yesterday, or what he tweeted, what, the day before, after he said that, hey, you know, Congress has 6 months to fix, you know, the Dreamer thing. And then he tweeted, or I'll address it again. So what does that mean? Did he'll extend it? Again, Barack Obama signed that thing as an executive order over 5 years ago, and Congress hasn't taken action on it. So, I heard Dana Perino say yesterday on Fox, probably the smarter thing to do would have been to let the court strike it down. That was, you know, going to happen in the next couple months. But, you know, and so so do you blame Donald Trump? I don't. So you mean to tell me that I'm going to play this stupid Republican game, this stupid partisan game, and I've made these promises to the American people, and I'm just going to sit here and allow Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan to do nothing? And again, you've heard everybody that I've asked on the program. Do you think any of this will happen? You know, guys like Mike Musselman. No. Mike's not a stupid dude, and he's not a partisan dude. He's a conservative, but he's a compassionate conservative. So anyway, we're gonna see if we can get Grant Nation here. We'll get his thoughts on. We'll talk about something more rational, like North Korea. How about that? All right. Grant's got a couple different phone numbers. So we'll see if we can.
Hi, Grant. I'm speaking.
Grant Nation, Mike McNamara. You're on All Marine Radio. Congratulations.
Okay, thanks very much.
Well, not everybody gets to be on this program, so I hope you know how lucky you are.
I am. Just one at a time. Always
great. First of all, give us a position report. Where are you?
That's a good one. I'm actually in London, England.
Ah, so it's, I'm not keeping you up late or getting you up way early in the morning. It's at actually a civil time.
Yeah, but I was sleeping in the afternoon, so that's
keeping me up. Your lethargy is not my problem, okay?
Okay.
Keeping you from your sleep. Okay, so exciting developments in recently here on the Korean Peninsula. First of all, I want to set the stage, but can you explain? There's their Independence Day coming up this weekend, so we'll probably see another great launch. And then I also want you to explain, what was this this conference that China hosted that he exploded his latest nuclear device in the midst of? So could you set those pieces, and then we'll begin our discussion today?
Okay. The first one, the upcoming missile that some people are talking about, the upcoming shot.
Right.
This is, just, to me at least, it's further evidence that Kim simply is not afraid of us. He's got 30 years of evidence to look at, and we've never really punished him or his father or his grandfather for anything that they've done. And we've been thinking, like, forever that, well, he'll never do the next thing. He just wouldn't, because that's crazy. But, well, he keeps doing this, and nothing happens to him. And Kim seems pretty sure that the Chinese won't do anything to him either. What he's doing, though, is, of course, irking the Chinese, Xi Jinping, of China in particular, because the last three things that he's done, either nuclear tests or missile shots, have actually coincided with the opening of something, some event that the Chinese leadership values and is counting on to get some good publicity to demonstrate the awesomeness and the grandeur of the Chinese Communist Party. And this is not a coincidence, the timing. And so Kim is sort of poking us in the finger with two eyes. He's at least poking the Chinese in at least one eye. What the meeting that you mentioned was something called the BRICS. To get together, and BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And it's sort of, it's an economic grouping of what are seen as sort of up-and-coming countries. And the Chinese are trying to take the lead on this BRICS grouping, partly because there might be some money in it, but more because it's sort of an alternative to the United States global leadership, economic global leadership. One of the backstories of BRICS is, and if you don't really follow it all that much, it's what you can, you might ask yourself, well, what exactly is it about Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa, at least, that from an economic standpoint is so splendid? The short answer is nothing. Each of these countries, their economy is a mess. Doing business there is a mess. It's not even for the faint of heart. It's more for the suicidal. Yet these are being touted as can't-miss economies and investments. What it goes back to is that BRICS was actually a coin termed by a guy at Goldman Sachs, sort of the Dr. Moriarty of crime, financial crime. I'm joking about that more or less. But it was simply a way to flog investments for the public. People who would say, well, Goldman Sachs is saying invest in these countries, and Goldman Sachs has some funds or ways you can invest in these countries, so therefore invest with Goldman Sachs. And it really is just a catchy name more than anything else. South Africa was actually added to make it sound better, apparently. If it was a different acronym, you would have different countries in it. So when you go back to the origins of it, one is perhaps rightfully doubtful of it all. But it is the thing that Chinese have kind of taken hold of and are trying to promote it. So the nuclear test took place on the day, just about the day this was supposed to open. And it obviously distracted all attention from the BRICS meeting and China's leading role in it to events on the Korean Peninsula. So that was no coincidence, and I think the Chinese are irked.
Now they've also conducted some kind of ship to land, intercept or at least they announced that they did, so that if they have some kind of inbound missile, they'll be able to shoot it down as well. So they're victims in all of this as well?
Oh, the Chinese?
Yes.
Well, in the sense that, like, if you had your pit bull dog and you were turning him loose now and then on the neighbors in the trailer park, and then one day the pit bull remembers that you're just as delicious as the neighbors are, that, you know, you're kind of a victim, but at the same time, the Chinese really have created, encouraged, and supported and maintained the Kim family regime since the beginning. So they are kind of getting paid back a little bit, but which is one is entitled to a little Schadenfreude at their discomfort. But it's, you know, one shouldn't make too much of it, but it does certainly show that the North Koreans can be difficult, not just to us and the Japanese and the South Koreans, and to their own family members, but also to China as well. But that is not to say China has no influence or ability to, really determine what goes on, in North Korea.
The Grant Newsham, our guest this morning, I didn't appropriately introduce him. Retired Colonel, United States Marine Corps. You can find what he writes if you search. You'll find it in Asia Times online, and I would imagine in a print edition as well. And he does a fair amount of work and specializes in the Pacific Rim, and we're privileged to have him on a regular basis when events happen around the world, and enjoy Grant tends not to sugarcoat, and he cuts through a lot of the nonsense that most people haven't paid too much attention to over the course of the years. Grant, let me just I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. I was watching somebody's analysis, and they said, look, Kim has watched his father do this. He studied what his grandfather did. He studied what the Chinese do. And this he knows. The United States have never done anything in the Pacific when either China has made some kind of aggressive movement or North Korea has. Short of war, so once we get past the early 1950s, the United States does what it does, which is make some kind of statement, with great emotion attached to it, and then it does nothing, and life goes on. And the Chinese have gone down that road with them in a variety of issues. And as you said a few minutes ago, why would he have any other conclusion? In fact, he's been absolutely correct. We haven't done anything. So there's two things that happened that have happened in the last week that, to me, I'm curious your thoughts about. Does it change the game? Because to me, potentially it does. One, the Japanese have said, or at least decided, and you told me this was going to happen, and so I'm going to tee this one up for you. The Japanese have said we need some kind of first strike capability, and we may need to relook at our constitution relative to our military. Is that just the normal consternation that you told me would happen and hand-wringing? And at the end of the day, that's a bit expensive. They will go ahead and allow the United States to defend Japan.
Yes, I'm afraid so. The Japanese sort of ruling class, or that part of it that handles affairs, they are indeed worried about North Korea. You know, that make no mistake, they are frightened. However, it doesn't translate into really concrete actions to really beef up or improve Japan's defense. And just to get so they are, of course, as you know, they talk about something called a strike capability, or the ability to shoot first, preempt, say, the North Koreans launching a missile in particular. The idea is they will see the missile on the pad, they will punch in the coordinates in a cruise missile, launch it off, and the problem is solved. And that's about how it's generally perceived in even most of the Japan's ruling class, although the military, most of the military people understand there's more to that. So that they talk about that. They've reinterpreted the Constitution to theoretically allow sort of a more aggressive approach or less passive approach to threats such as posed by North Korea, and more importantly, to support the United States. But here's the thing to look at, I think, that's helpful, is that the Japanese also, they've recently announced they're considering something called Aegis Ashore, which is the Aegis anti-missile system that's currently on Japanese ships and U.S. ships as well. And that's been in place for a while. But now they're going to get two ashore systems just based on land. Now, we know that the threat from Chinese missiles is urgent. We know Japan's leadership is really worried about it. And so you'd expect they will have the Aegis Ashore in place within maybe 5 months, quickly. But the plan is now, tentatively, they're thinking about having it in place in 5 years, not 5 months. So if it's 5 years from now that you're going to improve your missile defense system in a way it needs to be improved, one might suggest that's not really a sign of seriousness. Additionally, Japan's defense spending, they've announced that the planned increase, once again, once it gets pared down by the Ministry of Defense and once the defense contractors, both Japanese and Americans, increase their prices to take account of the increase, it really is not an increase at all. And if you're not willing to hurry and do things that are necessary and to spend money in adequate amounts and in a coherent way, I think one has to say that there are some real doubts about just how serious Japan's leadership is. It's not to say they're not worried,
right,
or that even some of them wouldn't like to do something, but at the end of the day, I don't see the concrete steps that one would need to see to think that the Japanese strategy amounts to anything more than leave it up to the Americans. There is on the talk, however, about Japan building nuclear weapons. And oddly enough, that's actually something that I think they just might, you might see nuclear weapons before you do actually Aegis Ashore.
Well, we'd be all for anything. All right, so let me, that's one. I was discussing game-changing, I was looking about, thinking of game-changing things that China doesn't control. One would be Japanese first strike capability, as you said, but in 5 years, not going to be taken seriously anytime soon, if anything comes of it at all. However, the Koreans, I think the major discussion point out of South Korea in the last few days has been the reintroduction of tactical nuclear weapons that were removed under the elder Bush. Talk to us about that. Does that change? And I say these two things as things that change the equation that possibly move China to say this is tipping the balance in a way that we don't like it. Okay, we like a benign Japan. We like a non-nuclear peninsula. And so now, in our own best interest, we need to do something. I don't know what that would be, but we need to do something to prohibit the nuclearization of South Korea. Make us smart about tactical nuclear weapons in South Korea.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're right, particularly when it comes to South Korea. If you may recall, just a few months ago, when the new president was elected, that he was talking like a leftist. He was saying things that really sounded too accommodationist toward North Korea. Public opinion, such as it seemed, was even appeared to be similar. And with the THAAD, that anti-missile system,
right,
that the previous Korean regime had put in, with the Americans, or put in part of it, there was a lot of opposition to that, and even at the highest levels, and also in public opinion. And now the Fed's, the president of South Korea said, well, let's have this whole system, let's put it in. They've rubber-stamped or have approved the environmental impact statement that was delaying it, and have said, oh, we got a problem here, let's put this in. And the public at large appears to support that, so you have seen something of a shift. And that's what's come, of at least in South Korea. And I think this is a well... I think China was planning on being able to use the THAAD issue to bully South Korea into acquiescing into what China wants, refusing to install this system, and really create some animosity between South Korea and the United States, at least create some distance. And what North Korea is now doing is actually having the effect of driving the South Koreans closer to the Americans and actually taking a harsher stance towards North Korea. These things do tend to come and go, of course, and if some time passes and North Korea doesn't do much, you may find this sort of leftist strain in South Korea reassert itself. But this is not something the Chinese expected. As for Japan, now, while I'm obviously pretty cynical, or maybe even dismissive of how
cynical. I think you're both.
But at the same time, Japan sometimes like a pinata, where they don't do anything, and then suddenly something happens, and it breaks, and they start doing a whole lot. And I think what you could find, maybe the environment is getting primed, that when the time comes, Japan really will sort of beef up its capabilities in a useful way. But you're also seeing, however, that, and I think what you're seeing is within Japanese public opinion, that there is an increasing and widespread acceptance that this age of pacifism, or fake pacifism really, is over. And there's a widespread acceptance that Japan needs to do something to defend itself, and it needs to do what we would consider commonsensical things. And at some point, I think that when it comes to that, the public opinion will support whatever the government wants to do. And in this case, I think we've already got public opinion out ahead of the ruling class in Japan. But also you're saying one thing you're not hearing this talk that you used to hear about Japan getting dragged into America's wars. You used to hear this a lot. And even in some of the mainstream papers, you're not hearing that at all. And there's, I think psychology has shifted in Japan to realize that Japan faces dangers, that it has to do things. And at some point, the politicians will catch up. But also there's an acceptance that the Americans are helpful. And it used to be there were some real doubts about the usefulness of the American presence. You don't hear that nearly as much as you did even, say, 5 years ago. And so that's where there has been some changes, and I would suggest that is driven entirely by North Korea, or 90%. I don't think the Chinese sort of advances and pressure on Japan, I don't think that had the same effect as North Korean nuclear weapons and nuclear missiles. And the Chinese, once again, we talk about them as being these great long-term thinkers who can think out quite a ways. I don't think they're all that. They may be patient, and they may they're willing to take some time to have things happen. But I don't think they're very good at figuring out cause and effect, or even the sequence of things happen. And once things happen they don't expect, you'll find they're flummoxed. They don't know what to do. They're really not very good at all at responding to these sudden changes, these sudden obstacles they face. And I think we're seeing that with Kim, what Kim is doing, that I think has surprised even the Chinese by and large.
Grant Newsham, my guest. We're talking about the latest developments on the Korean Peninsula. Let me read you an email. Mac, I love when Grant comes on. He always makes us all smarter. Will there be another test? Is this their Independence Day? What exactly is this thing they have going on this weekend?
I must say I haven't followed it that closely. I noticed it, but I didn't pay attention to his. It's really, you know, it could be National Secretary's Day, and that would be good enough for them to launch something off. I mean, obviously funny, but they will do it whenever they feel like it, and they're kind of on a roll. And I think we will, and as we've sort of discussed in the past, I think we will continue to see both nuclear tests and missile tests. There's just nothing, as I can see, that is causing, that is giving them any reason not to do it, is how it looks to me. And with this, we could have this conversation probably monthly for a while now, and we'd probably be talking about the latest thing North Korea's going to do. So it's, to me, it's kind of more of the same, and I would expect to see these things repeatedly for the foreseeable future.
Grant Newsham, our guest. So as we step out a little bit, what's changed? Nothing?
I think you're starting to see on the view, well, we just talked about on the South Korean side, the Japanese side, there has been and certainly on the Japanese side, there has been a deep-seated psychological shift, finally waking up to the fact that the region is dangerous and that Japan is not immune to these dangers. But also it seems to me that on the U.S. side there's been a shift as well. I always had the impression that for so many years, and when it came to North Korea, you know, everybody sort of thought, well, it's a problem, but they can't reach, North Korea cannot reach America. The missiles don't go as far. They don't really have nuclear weapons that you can move around and blow up, which I think is wrong. But we've always thought we're somehow immune. It's so different than the way the Japanese for years thought they were immune from risk and danger. And now I think there is a sense that we've come to a point where, say, San Francisco is at risk. And I don't know that we've had that fear maybe since 1812 when the British came and trashed Washington, D.C. But I think that is something new. And it requires a different set of sort of behavior and reaction by our leadership. And now it's not an academic issue of whether or not we need to preemptively or do something really forceful about North Korea. And you're also finally starting to see some real talk about getting rough on China with sanctions and economically in order to try and have some influence on North Korea. And I see that as kind of a last-ditch effort. And after that, if that doesn't work, then the choice is to sort of accept nuclear-armed North Korea or to do something about it. So that actually, I think there is a psychological change on our part that we finally feel threatened. And once again, on Japan's side as well. So each of these things that Kim does, it's not like it used to be where we knew we had, you know, even if he did something like shot a missile or had a nuclear test, we had always thought, well, there's some time. It really can't get to us. But I think that's over. And now each event or each thing that happens, we'll find a more increasing urgency on the part of the U.S. leadership to do something useful rather than, or something that might have some effect, rather than really the window dressing, the sort of kick the can down the road sort of things that we have traditionally done. There's a psychological, political change that I think has happened very recently. And that may be the big difference. So what Kim does, it's really amplified more than it used to be.
So it's amplified, but everything else remains the same. There's things on the margin. We see additional bombers in Korea. We've done some tactical stuff in conjunction with an exercise going on there that shows our ability to strike them, and we've seen that. other than that, the rhetoric a little bit more serious because the consequences have become increasingly real in the United States. What did you make of Nikki Haley's remarks? North Korea is begging for war.
I think that reflects, what I just said is that on the U.S. side, there is an acceptance that we just might have to fight. And I don't know that anyone really, that's new. This is no longer sort of an unthinkable option or an option that everybody kind of, might have said was there but knew it wouldn't happen. Now, I think we are at the point where, now we're willing to contemplate this and actually to do it. And I would expect that if Kim is, if he overreaches, as these guys always do, and should send a missile that towards the United States, towards Guam, or that hits Japan, or comes really close to Japan, I think if that happens, then I would expect fighting to start. I think we would respond. And so when she's saying that it's not bluster, and I think this is a reflection of just how serious this has gotten and how real the military option has gotten on our side. So it's at this point, I think it's kind of up to Mr. Kim. If he wants a war, he can have one easily. I think we're going to try economic sanctions for anything else and hope that works. But when she said that, this is not Baghdad Bob ranting, but I think there was something behind that.
So not much has changed. I got to take a break, and then when we come back, I got a couple emails that talk about kind of a sequence of events that we walked through, and then I read an article that talked about conventional conflict on the peninsula, what it looks like. Want to get your thoughts relative to the questions that get asked about that. We continue talking about events in the Pacific. Grant Newsham, our guest, he from London, of all places. So we interrupted a nap, which is his problem, not ours. More of that coming up next here on a Thursday edition, feels like Wednesday, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global SOC Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsocfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It was 7 on the west coast of the United States. Grant Newsham should be 8 hours ahead. Yes, Grant?
That's right. So it's mid-afternoon.
16:07 in London. I know that because Greenwich Mean Time is -8 from London, I believe. So, yeah, in California. Notice how I've got a mind like a steel trap and remember stuff like that? That's the way that works. Email question for you. Mac, on the road to war with North Korea, one of the things that you and Grant discussed was conventional casualty-producing events. We have not seen those. Does he still believe that those will be the next things that we see on the road to war? Grant, look into your crystal ball, my friend. What do you see?
Assuming that means, say, a North Korean missile hitting, say, Japanese territory, U.S. territory, that's one does expect that at some point in the future that could happen. It's already happened with Korea when that Korean ship was sunk in around 2010, and there was a number of sailors lost their lives. But I would expect that maybe it's at some point that you could have something's going to happen where people are going to get hurt. And in Japan's case, that's probably what it would take to really wake them up. But Kim, of course, has been pretty good at nibbling around the edges and trying not to go too far, not going too far. But at some point, say these guys always miscalculate. And you know, once he's scared us enough, or I think he could even just scare us enough, and probably that would probably be enough to get us to respond militarily.
So, bottom line, probably much more likely for the casualty-producing event to happen with the South Koreans, much like it did before, than it is with the Japanese.
Yeah, I would think so. And the South Koreans have, of course, been taking, you know, small numbers of casualties, unless you're one of them, for a long time. 96 or 97, that Korean commando team got in from that stranded mini sub and caused a few casualties. There was a booby trap that was a landmine put in the DMZ just a couple years ago that I think killed and seriously injured some Korean, I think, Korean Army or Marines, I forget which. And so there have been in small numbers. But if a missile or some device hits, you know, say hits Japan or and certainly hits the United States, then that'll be the thing. If it does hit Japan and the United States does not respond, then I would expect the U.S.-Japan defense relationship to end very quickly. As the Japanese realize that they've not gotten their, well, they've always gotten their money's worth, but that this is not what they expected, that they expected we would do what was necessary to defend them against this kind of enemy. So you really have a choice, either end that relationship with Japan or protect them and respond really forcefully and violently to North Korea. And I think when General Mattis has made these kind of statements that if we have to, we will respond violently, words to that effect, that I think that's not idle talk, but I think that would be what would happen and probably what should happen, I think. And one doesn't like to say that in a certain sense, but, you know, I think human experience and certainly the history of the 20th century suggests that giving in to that kind of pressure and intimidation it never pays off.
Another email here for you. Matt, could we go back to the tactical nuclear weapons? I would expect that you would see that in short order, and I would expect that would be the catalyst to some type of civilian casualty-producing / military casualty producing event along the coast that ratchets up tension. I don't believe he's got another card to play other than some kind of conventional casualty producing event to show that he's serious about this. And I don't think the president of South Korea, when you look at it, should be about anything other than showing mutual assured destruction on the peninsula. And I think the only way for him to do that is to have an offensive capability there. I think it also plays well for him domestically, that he's doing the right thing for the South Korean people. I'd be curious to get Grant's thoughts. So let's go down that road. The South Korean request, the United States provides tactical nuclear weapons on the peninsula. What response does Kim have?
Oh, I think the email actually said it very well. It was insightful. I think the email's right that I would add that if you put the tactical nuclear weapons back on the Korean Peninsula, it would be a very interesting development in terms of South Korean politics or South Korean thinking, when you do consider just how anti or sort of accommodating Moon was said to be, that was probably a bit of an overstatement, but not by so much, that it would show just how the South Koreans have, at least for a while, that would be a big deal. And we would, it's interesting because we would tend to look at this, and I say we, it's at least me and maybe a few others would see this as really an overdue, something that should have happened a long time ago. We would see it as a sensible measure to take to counter what was North Korean aggression and North Korean provocations. And, you know, I think we're right from our perspective, but it was very well stated, well, what about from Kim's perspective? And he would see this as a I think, an immense provocation. It would feed on this apparent North Korean belief that the Americans and their South Korean puppets are intent on invading North Korea. And so from their perspective, I think they really would see this as us increasing, sort of intensifying the problem, and as a step we took that they have no alternative but to respond to. And I think that would it would result in a the North Koreans doing something that ups the ante, that tries to bloody South Korea's nose and maybe even ours in the process. It's important to look at how North Korea would view that, because they say, while we might think it's a sensible and common sensible thing to do, that and a measured response, but I think the North Koreans would go berserk. Now, it doesn't take much to get them to go berserk, but I think that this would be a big step. It probably would have been better not to have removed them. So right. It gives us a good reminder of just how dumb these kind of this sort of concessionary behavior can be, and just the difficulty of trying to restore the situation once you've let down your guard. And you know, I would imagine that if you went back and you looked at all the debate and all the op-eds, etc., when the tactical weapon nukes were removed, that it was probably like you'd expect. You know, it's you know, the appeasers saying, well, this is a good thing to do because it will, everybody has their finger on the trigger, so we'll back off first and they'll respond favorably. And the other group saying, this is insane, doesn't anyone remember Neville Chamberlain? And they of course get laughed out of the room. But it always turns out that the latter group is the one that's right, but it's a good reminder just how hard it is to recover when you have handed over an ace or two to the other guy in the poker game. It's never not a good position to be in.
Well, you know, it sounds like everything that you've explained to us, it is that in spades. It is this irrational hope that if we treat this rogue government responsibly and show restraint, to say they will somehow do the same. And although there's no historical precedent for it, it's, well, let's just not provoke them, and somehow that will make the situation get better. And again, it flies in the face of the one true maxim of history, and that is peace through strength. And so to me, when you defy that, and the Japanese have defied that, by allowing somebody else to be in charge of their defense. And so to me, the reason that I think the reintroduction of tactical nuclear weapons to the peninsula is important and good is, okay, Kim takes it as a provocation. Now what? What other card are you gonna continue to blow up that mountain that you've been detonating nuclear device after nuclear device under? Are you gonna continue that? And once you blow up that mountain, what's the next? I hope you have another place, because if not, it's gonna take you a while. What are you gonna do? I would imagine that every radar, every unit that's anywhere in South Korea is on an extremely high state of alert. And the coast off of North Korea is being watched by assets on top of assets on top of assets to see if anything goes to sea, anything takes off is being tracked. So what will he do? Something conventional is his only card. he can shoot intercontinental ballistic missiles, but I would say that the day is going to come when him shooting those and us shooting them down is going to be a regular occurrence. And so on this road to war or something, the other thing I think it does is it lets the Chinese know we are done waiting for you.
I think that the Chinese might be getting that impression already, but they need to be told it directly, and hopefully our side is. But it's interesting because I think that that Kim, when you think about what he can do in terms of provocations, I think shooting missiles around is one of his better options. And of course, he can shoot artillery against the parts of the South. He can maybe even insert some special forces to cause trouble. But you find, I think, that at some point even he's going to run out of good options for threatening us, for threatening South Korea. And, so if it just keeps being that he shoots ICBMs all over the place, that's one of his better options in terms of getting out, and he's sort of getting it out farther away to really frighten more people. But at some point, these guys always overreach, that they don't understand that at some point you've suddenly woken up. When you frighten Americans in particular, that generally nothing good happens to you. It's unfortunate it would take so long to frighten us, to get us to act, but I think it's a very useful exercise to think through what exactly can he do that is going to be such a big deal. It's going to scare us, or it's going to make people pay attention to him. And it really comes down to shooting off nuclear weapons, shooting off more or testing nuclear weapons, shooting off ICBMs more often, more in different places. And then one day he'll finally announce that he has miniaturized nuclear hit on the top of these ICBMs, and they're ready to go if anyone does anything. And then once he's got that, he may think that, he's safe. And yet he may not think that we just might respond to that as a mortal threat. Each side, there's always a response, and sometimes it seems that each side, but particularly us, we think we've had the last word. We've done the thing that he won't do anything more because of, we flew a B-1 bomber over the Korean Peninsula. That sort of thing. But it keeps going back and forth, and at some point, I think he in particular is going to do one thing too many. And that would be my guess. It is interesting. You did mention the difficulties we have negotiating with people like North Korea, I think America in general, both businessmen and the governments, we don't negotiate very well, particularly in Asia. We tend to act as though we got Canadians across the table who will appreciate us doing them a favor and give us a favor in return. But what you find in Asia is that preemptive concessions get pocketed, and you'll find that another concession is being requested before you know it. And we've just completely got it wrong time and again in Asia. And that includes negotiating with our friends. But that's what we are. I think the best deal the American government ever cut was when Benjamin Franklin got the French to help us against the British in the Revolutionary War. And I don't think we've negotiated very well very often since then.
Grant Newsham, my guest here on a Thursday, we're talking about the latest developments in the drama that continues to unfold in the northwestern Pacific Ocean. The another email for you, Grant. Hey Mac, I want to go back to the conventional side of this, and I'd like to ask Grant a question. We've read so much about these tunnels that supposedly the North Koreans were digging in the 70s. They're now somewhat tourist attractions there. Given the advances in seismic X-rays, and then he writes in parentheses, ground-penetrating radar, how in God's name do the North Koreans get to South Korea in any substantial numbers, given what we can do in terms of ISR from both satellites and from airborne platforms? Any massing will bring an incredible retaliation. How does he not only mass his troops, but how does he get them through the DMZ? So, Grant, do you, I mean, are you familiar enough with Korea? I would imagine that would be, again, with the advent of ground-penetrating radar, you know, he can go deeper and maybe try to avoid it, but those things are extremely long, and then it doesn't take a whole lot to jack one of those up. So how does he get numbers south of the DMZ?
Yeah, that's a fair question. A couple things to think about is consider the Israelis and Gaza,
right,
where you have the bad guys have, you know, they keep building tunnels. The Israelis have trouble finding all of them. And that's a fairly very small area. You think they would have some way of sort of monitoring every square inch, every inch, way down below the surface to detect tunnels, and yet they never are able to get them all. You know, there's always some new one, and up pops some terrorist, and it causes trouble. And then even in our southwest, where it seems that illegal immigrants and drug smugglers who have these sophisticated tunnels that get discovered every now and then. And you know, we perhaps probably don't have the technical assets to monitor the southwest border.
Right.
But it's not quite as easy as it seems to find all of these things. And the South Korean borders, or the DMZ border, is so long that, you know, I have a feeling that the monitoring is not nearly as all-encompassing as one would think. So you really have to just slip a few of these things in that don't get detected. And as I gather, you can move quite a few through these things in short order, get through the DMZ. I think that's say, overland. That's another question. And the one thing to note is that the North Koreans are able to move, once again, overland, sort of in very difficult terrain. They're able to move large numbers of troops fairly quickly, and you can get quite a ways just even overnight if you hurry. And at some point, the problem can be that there's just so many guys coming in so many places that you can't shoot them all. And you know, yes, they'll eventually sort of the tide will run out of momentum, but it can be very nasty until you've until you've gotten it under control.
Right.
So the tunnels, it seems like we never find them all, even with the technology we've got, and they can probably get, say, a lot of troops down just because there's so many of them, and to say the ability to move over terrain that generally is thought of as not an avenue of approach. They are good at that, capable of it. And you just, the numbers-wise, it would be a very difficult thing to deal with for at least some period of time until you really, in simple terms, have killed enough of them. But the point is well taken. You know, how is he going to mass, really get some mass? And that's a challenge that, you know, I wouldn't want to be Kim. I have to figure that one out.
Hey Grant, when you turn the map and you become him and you look at the tactical and operational problem, it's not a small problem. It is our ISR. He may try to go toe to toe with us, but we will dominate the air at some point. It's what we do. And there's no way that we won't do it against a nation like North Korea. I've got an email here that asked an interesting question. Mac, yesterday you were talking about the effect of the war in Iraq on North Korea's nuclear program, it being included in the Axis of Evil along with Iran and Iraq. They have much of the same hardware exported from the Soviet Union that Iraq had, and seeing Iraq's military largely dismantled in such a quick way was probably a very sobering lesson for the North Koreans, and probably put additional emphasis, as you said yesterday, I was quoting from an article, on their nuclear program as really the only way to sustain themselves against South Korean and American aggression. And if you look at it from his perspective, quite rightly so, too. If you assume that at some point they will come north of the 38th parallel, then nuclear weapons are your only way short of China's intervention. My question for Grant is, does he see validity in this link to the Iraq war? So, Grant, do you see linkage there? And if you're the Kim family sitting in North Korea watching the videotape coming out of there, you have a holy shit moment where you're thinking, you know what, boys, we have some motivated soldiers and they'll fight and die. But the bottom line is Iraq had the fifth largest standing army on the planet, and the United States annihilated them in the better part of 2 weeks. So your thoughts relative to the linkage between that?
Oh, I think there's definitely a linkage, and obviously Qaddafi is mentioned as well. And obviously Ceausescu, you can throw him in. And any one of these dictators that got into a lot of trouble after the wall fell. But, you know, Iraq and Libya, that is, it's not as if they don't know of it. And I think that Kim's, as the emailer described, I think that's exactly the thinking that's going on. If I was Kim, I would do the same thing. I don't think I would poison my half brother in Kuala Lumpur, or shoot my uncle with a anti-aircraft gun. But I would, when it comes to nuclear weapons and missiles, I would probably do the same thing he's doing. And I think one interesting way to think about it that I find useful is if you watch an episode of The Sopranos,
yes,
you know, they're always afraid of, like, who's going to come get them, what rival gang is, you know, or when are the cops or the FBI going to get them. And everything they do is geared towards maintaining their position, their power, and not go, you know, really not getting taken out or not getting killed or going to jail. And really, the Kim regime sees things where, in some degree, they see it similarly, is that everything is a threat to them, and this threat in particular is the United States. And we of course think, well, we're not going to do anything to them as long as he doesn't do anything to us. But that isn't how he sees it. Apparently,
right.
Is he does see us as a threat, and having these weapons is the one thing that guarantees his sort of. This North Korean version of the Sopranos can stay in control of the mob, their mob.
I've always found that key to understanding tactical problems is you got to turn the map around and assume he's not stupid. And if you were him fighting you, where would you be? He knows your combined arms capacity. So that probably eliminates most forward slopes. Or if he's on a forward slope, he's dug into the forward slope, not on top of it. And so when you look at the problem from his perspective, one of the reintroduction of nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons to the peninsula, what card does he play? What else can he do? And so, to me, the next thing is to bracket Guam. You know, what will the United States do? Will that be enough to start a war on the Korean Peninsula? And I would think, in his estimation, the answer is no. And so, but what it will do is it will allow me to take other measures. Well, what are those other measures? I've already fired an ICBM through the goalposts of Japan. It's not like I shot that thing tangentially to Japan either. I mean, I shot it right through the uprights. Okay? And so so what else do I have? Should I shoot closer to Japan? Should I shoot off the coast of South Korea and expect them to do nothing? Where else can I go? And I think, you know, where else can he can go? The movement of units inside his own country that creates consternation, and then events at sea on those islands or the other card he can play. But he's a creative, diabolical guy, and I don't pretend to be an expert on him, but I think that the reintroduction is good for South Korea. I think it's good for China in that it's a thing that China can't control. And it changes the balance of power in the Western Pacific. And if South Korea does it, might Japan say, you know what, we ought to have some kind of response so that we have a card on the table and we're simply not sitting here as a victim. And so, is there anything that you would say I think we all assume that there will be another launch over the course of the weekend as they celebrate their something akin to Independence Day, Founders Day or something like that. Is there anything that you expect the next shoe to drop in all of this?
I would imagine we'll see more of what we've been seeing,
right.
Sort of nuclear tests and the missiles. And one of the odd, not odd things, but the, you know, he's not as smart as people might think he is. And he's kind of, you know, as we've been discussing, you know, he's only got so many things he can do. And, you know, like a child having a tantrum or that there's only so much they can do. Before they, you know, just go too far. But I think that in front, when you do turn the map upside down and look at it from his perspective, I think the thing that really that stops him is from his objective of reunifying the peninsula under North Korean control. The big problem for him is the American presence and the American commitment to defending South Korea. So if he can get that either eliminated or can create enough political or enough of a split between the Americans and the South Koreans so that we are less committed, then he's improved his odds considerably. But until he can do something about that, he's really got it's an almost insurmountable problem for him, if that's your objective. Is to reunify the peninsula. And that's one of the reasons why I think that what he's doing is kind of stupid, because I think he'd have been much more successful if he reinstituted his charm offensive, had been spoken words towards South Korea, talked about the fraternal brotherhood between the North and the South, and how it's just the Americans who are to blame. And you have a younger slice of the South Korean society that actually kind of falls for that. You have even a slice of the older part that falls for that. And we saw that during the Sunshine era in the 2000s, where the economic ties, the tourism ties between the countries improved. And there was very much a sense that the Americans are the problem in South Korea. And if he was smart, he would have kept that going, or he would reinstitute it. All the while biding his time and sort of creating some distance between the Americans and the South Koreans. And to the point that the South Koreans are resentful. The Americans at some point might think, well, this isn't workable. They're a headache. They can figure it out themselves. You know, maybe not tomorrow, but they, you know, that would have been it for him, I think, a more effective approach than what he's currently doing, because at some point, you know, he's not, you know, we're going to go get him. And the Chinese would have been advised to have maintained their charm offensive from the 2000s as well. If they were as smart as they think they are, they would have kept it going another 5 years, and all of Asia would have disarmed and would have told the Americans that the Americans are the problem, the Chinese are not a threat. But these kind of regimes, they're not, as I say, they're not as smart as we think they are. And, you know, you can be sort of up the ante in terms of violence and threatening and hectoring. But at some point, there's just not much more you can do that's very interesting or that the other side is willing to, that we would be willing to accept. So tactically, he's got a very difficult problem as long as the Americans are there. So getting rid of the Americans should be, you know, that is his objective, but I don't think he's going about it the right way.
If anything, I would tell you that, you know, American patience has allowed, you know, the new president of South Korea to come in and kind of, you know, initially what we saw was, hey, I don't want all those batteries. That's not what I was briefed that was going to happen. Remove those. And, you know, then you had the charm offensive. And now what has happened is that, you know, from all indications, he's concluded that you can't negotiate from a position of weakness with North Korea. And simply the mere discussion of tactical nuclear weapons being reintroduced is interesting. And then you'll read, you know, that parts of Korea are adamant that they should be reintroduced. Simply that discussion is forcing the United States and South Korea closer together, not further apart. So I absolutely agree with you. Whatever he thought, whatever his intention was, and however he thought he could parse this with by putting South Korea in the middle of a confrontation between North Korea and the United States, does not seem to be working. And if anything, there seems to be greater cooperation between South Korea and the United States. And South Korea almost emerging as a greater power in the region, greater than Japan.
I think you're right. Plus militarily, I think the South Korean military is better than the Japanese by and large. The Navy would be the exception. But also what you've now got, you know, what he had going was that China was really hammering South Korea over the THAAD missile system introduction, and they're still economically pressuring South Korea. And it was causing some wobbling within South Korea, but now that was causing trouble with our relationship with South Korea. And now that's pretty much changed because of what Kim has done. And as noted at the beginning, the timing of what he's doing it's irked the Chinese. It doesn't seem quite as clever as one would imagine.
Right.
But you're right that what he's done is actually has caused a number of things or some things to fall in place to our benefit, to our favor. Whereas we, you know, without this, we would not be able to really get the Japanese to value us more and to value, at least in theory, value their own defense, improving their own defense the way they have. We wouldn't have been able to talk the South Koreans into changing their minds or changing their behavior. And even regionally, that there's, I think, more of an appreciation of the United States in certain places. And finally, what you've noted is that sometimes just not saying anything and let events play out actually works. It can be a pretty good strategy. I think we may see that with the Philippines. As at some point, President Duterte he'll sort of do what happened to Donald Rumsfeld. He'll go from being a really popular guy to somebody that nobody wants to see on the cover of any magazine. So his act will wear out eventually. And sometimes not responding to sort of everything and just letting things happen is not a bad approach to take.
Whoa, who would have thought it? American restraint. And because it seems in South Korea, anyway, that's exactly what we've done. And we've allowed the president of South Korea to politically kind of, you know, move his arms, exercise his discretion, knowing that he has very, very limited choices, knowing that restraint and quote-unquote pacification and an outstretched hand are not going to be grasped by Mr. Kim in North Korea, and so who would have thunk the United States restrained and a little bit farther a little bit longer viewpoint. Interesting. Another email, Mac. I'm curious Grant's thoughts on whether this is getting outside of China's realm. To me, China has enjoyed watching North Korea be a burr under the saddle of the United States. And as Grant has repeatedly told us all on this program, they have no incentive to help. And if they don't have any incentive, why would they? I've taken that to heart. I sound very smart when I repeat that at cocktail parties, by the way. But it seems to me the Chinese are risking losing what little control they may have over North Korea as events leave their sphere. Grant's thoughts on that. Is a point coming when this gets outside of China's realm of control, if they had it to begin with?
One thing I'd note first is that I always learn something from these emails. And the only time I don't learn something, actually, is when I'm talking to people from the State Department. China has, their position has, I'd say, worsened since all this has started, and really in recent months even. They've been exposed, one is dark. Particularly what they've done to South Korea. And this is why now it's far more widely recognized in the region than it was just a long while ago. In terms of their influence over North Korea, ultimately they could turn North Korea off in a week because they do control the oil,
right,
and the food. And so they will always have that leverage and that ability. I think what you're finding is that, Kim has done all these things and at the same time his capabilities for missiles and nuclear weapons have gotten better. And the more he does it, the more advanced he gets, the closer he gets to having these systems. He's even less, he's more willing to tell the North Koreans, the Chinese to get lost. And almost once he has those weapons, can almost dare them to cut off the oil, or the food, because he's got nuclear weapons that fit on missiles, and Beijing's a lot closer than Los Angeles, and that is something I don't think the Chinese really thought that through, and it goes back to the mean guy with the pit bull in the trailer park. Once the dog turns around, it's not something he ever expected. And I don't think the Chinese really thought this through. I don't think that China's leadership thinks through the sequence of events, potential reactions to what they do. And as I noted, they don't respond well to surprises. And so I think what the email suggested is correct, that the China's position towards North Korea, towards the region, has worsened as a result of what Kim has been doing. Because he looks ridiculous. If the North Koreans of all people, and the Chinese don't see the Koreans as equals, if those of all people will embarrass, the leader of China at the start of this ceremony with the BRICS group, and there's the two other things, the two previous ones have been similarly timed, little fatty, as they call him in China, if he does that to Xi Jinping, the head of China, that, how more embarrassing can that be? So the email, I think, is onto something there, and I think is correct.
We've also learned that his nickname is Winnie the Pooh. And now every time I see him, I chuckle because he does look like Winnie the Pooh. You learn a lot of stuff here on All Marine Radio, to include some interesting nicknames. I have a question, again, to go back to the tactical problem from the south side. I'm from the north side. So I spin the map. I look at it as a general in the North Korean army. I, for life of me, given what's going to happen in the air war, that I don't believe that we will prevail in the air war. How do I sustain a large formation of anything for any period of time? They can leave with what they have with them. My ability, based on what I saw in the war in Iraq, to conventionally sustain them is going to be, and I'll be kind here, problematic at best. The more I look at the tactical problem from the North Korean perspective, the more I just don't see how they think that they can, with a conventional force, and I don't care what the size of it is, they will not be able to sustain it. They may make initial gains, but then it will be annihilated, in my opinion. our precision weapons are many, and they're huge. And so, yeah, they will be occupied. They will be occupied initially, but between us and the South Koreans, we can fly enough sorties and our other allies that I would imagine the Australians would be involved in it at that time. I don't know if the Brits would be involved in it at that time, given whatever action the UN might take, but there would be enough sorties to certainly service large formations and especially their logistics, which would sustain them. So the more I look at this, Grant, I don't know that, you know, I'm not afraid of him, you know, conventionally. Yeah, I mean, we see all the parades and all that bullshit, but we saw the tanks in Iraq. We saw their, you know, the CSU, you know, 423s and all the rest of that nonsense as well. And at the end of the day, it was not even a fair fight. It was we dismantled their air umbrella, and then slowly but surely we dismantled everything else. It wasn't even sporting. We're flying guided munitions through the windshields of cabs. That's the accuracy of trucks. That's the accuracy and then the lethality, to say nothing of that. Do we overestimate their tactical ability? I look at it, and I how does he sustain anything without air cover? And if he withdraws, if you say, okay, he can provide air cover for at least a while in North Korea. Okay, but if we decide we're not going into North Korea, we're content to hold the DMZ and to destroy whatever comes south of it. I don't see how he tips it in his favor.
Good question. I think you're right. Ultimately, these guys often, you know, don't think about things the way we do. You know, if you're willing to lose 100,000 guys and you don't, you know, you just don't mind. Sometimes you will roll the dice, but to me, it goes back to the requirement to get rid of the Americans. If we're there, it's very difficult for him, and I think ultimately impossible. But if we're not there, then he's got more of a chance. But even if we are there, things just get, for us to get things under control would be a nasty business. Just because of the numbers involved, and I don't think there's going to be many vehicles driving around for very long. And so that, to me, that's less of an issue, but it's just these huge numbers of ground forces that are pushed south. And it's a big country, and you just need, and so it, you know, they will probably in some places make some progress, overrun the defenses, but you know, it will eventually, the wave will, it'll run out, and then it gets under control. But until that happens, it would be a nasty business to finish it off.
Right.
And even then, you've got to, then what do you do if you're going to move north? And there's still enough of them left to operate from on the defensive. I think if even starving troops that are fanatic in their fight to the death, that can be difficult to deal with. It's costly to deal with.
Well, and again, but the war plan calls for killing him and then hopefully negotiating with whoever takes his place, for some kind of armistice and then being able to open up something diplomatically. But that would be regime change, yes, killing him. And so there would be no, I don't know that there would be a sustained plan to go north in there until after any kind of air umbrella. And then if you did, just know the numbers to go up geometrically. So you would kill him, and you would expend great effort to kill him. And then because that limits all your other casualties. You don't need to go own all of North Korea. And take the casualties that would be associated with that. What you need to do is kill him and have regime change there. And so, I look at the problem from his perspective, and I think it's an impossible task. And the other thing is that, yeah, would they leak through? But I don't sell the South Korean military short. I mean, I've trained with them. They are tough, and they've lived this threat for years and years and years and years. And they're a formidable military, and they're an advanced military because they use our weapons and our systems, and they don't tend to lose very often. So, so again, I just say that as we kind of gone through this kind of tit for tat, how this thing ratchets up. My own opinion is that he's running out of cards to play. You know, the bracketing of Guam. Okay. Now we begin to shoot these down. Tactical nuclear weapons come to the peninsula. More American forces move to the peninsula. Now what? Now what?
You're right. He's as you say, running out of cards. So I would rather be in our position than his. You know, he played his hand very poorly,
right,
or very well. He's had a very weak hand. But at some point, once the big guy wakes up, and says that's enough. Well, what are you going to? At what point? Then what do you do?
Yeah. Then what? Now what?
So at some point, he isn't going to have many cards to play, if at all.
Right. Right.
And then he's in he will be able to cause less trouble, perhaps. But it's always hard to predict. If one thing that is certain is it's really hard to predict how these things play out. And once the shooting starts, if it does start, then that's even harder to play out or to figure out exactly how it's going to happen. I would note I have no idea what the war plan is, but
nor do I.
I think we can all kind of make a guess just from experience and what sort of logic tells us.
Right. I have one other comment I was going to make. I forgot what it was. It's from an email. Let me get the email. Mac, I find it interesting, as I've reflected on something you said, I don't know, a week or so ago, about Saddam Hussein's sons going to him when tanks were loading off the coast of the United States, on the Carolinas, and in California, when armor was being trained to ports. That is a pretty serious indication that the Americans are coming for your ass. And you kind of made up this facetious conversation between Uday Hussein and Saddam talking about, let me reenact it. Yo, Dad, we have these reports and pictures of divisions of armor and infantry moving to ports. Now, this dictator gig is a sweet gig, and we have one of the few on the planet. How about we let those inspectors in? We know there's nothing here, and even if they found something, we'll agree to dismantle it. But we're not going to give up. If they're coming, they're coming here. Do we not think they're going to load those tanks on ships and come here and then do nothing? And so at that point, I would love to have been sitting in the room to hear, what did Saddam say? No, they'll never do it. They'll never take our military on. Dad, they thumped our ass in Kuwait. We didn't even fight. Do you remember the highway to hell? That little traffic jam? And we still haven't got our MPs to unscrew their traffic control. What will this one be like? So that's what he's alluding to, my facetious conversation. But you've always said, look, at some point they overplay their hand. Gaddafi did, Saddam Hussein did, and as irrational as it may sound to us, Saddam must have looked at him and said, they'll never do it. They don't ever do it. And so, what will that point be, with Mr. Kim? All right, what are you writing about this week, sir?
Oh, what am I trying to give him a couple ideas, but one of them is the one thing that you notice about the North Korea situation is that nobody ever mentions that you've got this horrific humanitarian catastrophe of a population being tortured in ways that the Khmer Rouge would have recognized, and this has been going on for a good long while, and you rarely hear this mentioned. And what the genesis of this was about a decade ago, when I was the Marine Attaché in Tokyo, I was invited to a UN-sponsored seminar in Japan about how to deal with North Korea's burgeoning nuclear effort. And as it, all the speakers talked about these different formulas for Carrots, giving him stuff, giving him assurances, and getting him to reduce it by bit or a lot by a lot. And that's what they talked about, for these ways of bribing him into giving stuff up. And when I got up there, I'm generally full of self-righteousness to start with. My talk was, you know, I said, look, you know, every speaker here, not one of them has mentioned this god-awful humanitarian catastrophe that's going on. And such and such. But I was, you know, made my case. And, yeah. and at the break, two Americans or Westerners came up to me, and they introduced themselves as being from the Department of Defense. And they said, boy, we wish we could say that. And I said, oh, you mean we can't? I mean, I had no idea that an American or a Marine would not speak up for people being tortured. And I mean, but in this whole debate, you know, ask yourself, how often do you hear anybody refer to the North Korean gulag that someday a Korean Solzhenitsyn will write about? You never hear it. Poor Slobodan Milosevic, where the next world must be wondering just what he did that was so bad to get himself arrested, sent to hospital where he died. So that's what I'm thinking of writing about. So I just talked my way through for 200 words.
What's the word limit?
Oh, it's usually 850, which I find is about right, because I only have about 850 words
in me
worth to say about anything.
All right.
And that's touching it. Yeah.
All right. So how long will you be in the UK?
Just a couple of days. I come here every fall for there's a symposium at Cambridge University.
Oh.
And I speak about financial crime or economic crime. And so that's what I do. The resentment builds up for a year, for 12 months, and I come and then insult the entire audience, and then I come and repeat it the next year as well.
Well, the Brits invented financial crime, I think, or at least they globalized it. So I find that amusing. Hold on, one more email that deals with Confederate monuments. Mac, I'm curious to know what Grant's position would be. I listened to your little soliloquy a week ago about the timeline for slavery, which I might add I thought was outstanding. It gave some context to the actions of men like Jefferson and Washington in the time during which they lived. If I could just summarize what I understood you to say, in 1833, England abolished slavery internally. It had been abolished, it had abolished the importation of slaves prior to that, but not slavery itself. So that would have meant that Washington freed his slaves in his will upon his death or the death of his wife in 1797 when he passed away. That is 36 years before the leading power and the first to do so abolishes slavery. I'm curious Grant's thoughts about how we view history in the rearview mirror. Newsham, that's actually a pretty good summary of what I said. So what say ye to judging history by a contemporary lens?
You better be careful if that's what you're going to do. To me, this whole thing, I'm from Virginia, actually, although I'm not a Southern. My great-great-grandmother was George Crook's sister, great-great-great-grandmother, the guy who got Geronimo to surrender once. And,
yeah, there's a book. There's a very famous book called Crook on the Border.
I've got it. He's a direct relative. But when I was little, I'm from Alexandria. I remember my mother taking me to Christ Church in Alexandria and pointing out where George Washington sat and where Robert E. Lee sat. Their pews are still there.
Wow.
Looking back on history like that, to me, this, you know, I think we could all speak at some length about it, but it reflects the balkanization of the U.S. We've been seeing each other as different tribes, and you have nations who successfully played that, to get power, and different tribes with resentments and grievances against other tribes who have stuff they have, or think they that have stuff that the one tribe thinks they should have. So that does now one of the ways that I see it. But you know, people can make themselves as miserable as they want, and particularly if resentment is your starting point, you can pick a fight over anything. And I would suggest that there's not a single human on the planet that deserves to have a statue anywhere. That you know, if one wants to take that position, you can always find something. And I would, you know, like to see some consistency in the argument and on the other side, because my father was from California, and I remember him, and he's long gone, but I remember him talking with some great bitterness over the treatment of the Japanese Americans after Pearl Harbor. And to me, if one is going to be consistent and doesn't like seeing Robert E. Lee's statue or Thomas Jonathan Jackson's, then I would suggest that to be consistent, to be honest, one should have every statue of FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, taken down. The 10-cent piece, the dime, should be removed because he's on it. And he is the one who locked up these American citizens for no reason other than the economic and financial gain of certain agricultural interests in California. And to me, that's a pretty straightforward case. I would note as well that if you go to West Virginia, you will see Robert Byrd's name on everything, or on all sorts of things, highways, post offices, schools, you name it. Robert Byrd was a senior official or senior member of the Ku Klux Klan, yet he was also the Democratic Party's, stalwart, one of the most prominent Democratic politicians until recent times, so let's see the protests go after that. And well, what this is getting at is the difficulties of looking back into history and trying to characterize people in a way that that feels good emotionally, but it does not make much sense intellectually, or even from a sense of basic fairness or consistency. And that's how I would see it. So I would. If somebody wants the Confederate statues to come down, fine, but I would like at the same time to have Roosevelt's statues come down and Robert Byrd's name expunged from everything that a being might lay on it. And there isn't a single person you can't find something that they've done that would, that you could have any, a nice protest in front of whatever monument they've got. But that's the human experience, and the ancient Greeks used to write about this stuff. They would write tragedies and comedies about this sort of behavior. But you do also have sort of a half-educated, you've got a lot of half-educated people around, and that's a reflection of schools not teaching here these days from a young age onward. So that's just my take on it. I haven't lived in the United States or other than Hawaii for goodness 25 years, so I really have no idea what Americans really think.
All right, I will leave you with this. It seems like, and this is from an email, it seems like in contemporary culture where we communicate at 140 words per session, that we need to allow the bow wave to crest over us, which is social media, and then hopefully the adults stand up in communities around the country and they get involved and the right things are done. There are some communities that have done that. And Mac, I think that your point is right. Don't bleach your history. Build it out. Leave those pews and leave those windows and also erect some kind of display that talks about the number of people that were enslaved in the vicinity of Alexandria during the period of slavery. Use it as a teaching point. This was us. This was who we really are. Don't run from it. Don't bleach it. Use it to teach. In that way, we can all learn and be better. But when we take it down and we put it away, with a few exceptions, I think that's wrong. I agree with that. I taking it down, to me, active courthouses to ask Black Americans to, and your FDR thing is pretty interesting. because it's not a place that we normally go with him. But to ask black soldiers, right, to serve at Fort Jackson in Mississippi, to serve at Fort Bragg, those are all famous people that fought in an insurrection that was had at its root slavery. Is that right for an active duty military base? To me, I don't think it is, and I think it ought to be changed, and you ought to create some kind of little museum at the front of the gate and says, you know, this is how we became Fort Jackson, as the nation attempted to heal itself after the Civil War. We did these things as concessions to the South to bring them back into the Union. They put up monuments on battlefields, although they were defeated. And we did this to bind the wounds of what is still the costliest war in the nation's history. And so, again, teaching moments. So, anyway, we could spend a lot of time on that. All right, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you. Go ahead.
I wish I had said that, but the other fellow said as well. But I'm with you. I'd like to just keep them, but also make sure everything else is in there so that you have a full understanding. Otherwise, it never stops, and it's Orwellian. So, but thanks very much. I always enjoy this.
All right, sir. Travel safe, and we will talk to you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. And there you have it. That is Grant Newsham. We'll take a quick break. The Gunner going to join us next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used.
Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global Stock Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the stock community should be aware of.
The Global Stock Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Oops. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. The next senator from the state of Michigan,
ooh,
Kid Rock.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great, man.
I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, but last week Kid Rock was he was getting heckled. Because they said he made a political announcement and he was raising money and he hadn't, you know, he hadn't filed the right paperwork. His response: fuck off.
I love Kid Rock, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. He goes, the all you people out there who are on my ass because I didn't fire them. I didn't file the right paperwork. Fuck off. Like, oh, thanks, Senator. Any other words? It was awesome. Okay, let me ask you a tactical question. All right.
Okay, let me get in that frame of mind right now.
Get your tactical hat on. If the North Koreans come across the border, how do they sustain any kind of substantial ground formation, knowing that they have essentially the same equipment set as the Iraqis did in 2003 with some updates?
It's a great question. I mean, so it's the problem is, I'm trying to think, it was like what, 19, it was after the Korean War, like 1956, 1958, that timeline in there,
right,
that they had a boost in equipment and everything else, and then it kind of tapered off. And so they have, you look at their parades, they have this look of this modern, they have like a modern tanks or modern vehicles, but those are just fiberglass facades on piece of shit chassis. So, yeah, I mean, they really can't. And what they have to do is, what I think what they'll end up doing is they'll use either chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons on that peninsula. They're going to have to if they want any kind of, as soon as they come across, and they'll get into Seoul, believe me, they'll push into Seoul. But once they start moving down the southern part of that peninsula and everything starts coming on and the planes start coming on and we whack all their early warning systems and all their SAM sites, we're going to own the sky, man. And then it's just, it literally is, you know, ducks in a barrel,
yeah,
fish in a pond.
and Mike's seen that, right? During the march up, Mike, once we own the sky, it's
it can't move, man.
It's not even sporting. I mean, it's
no.
Precision guided weapons through the windshields of trucks.
The analogy is when you were a kid and you would sit there and watch, you cover like a 12-inch by 12-inch patch of ground, and some of it would have grass, some of it would have little sand mounds or dirt mounds, and you'd kill ants every time you saw one. Boom. And you'd squish it. Bush. Boom. 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 With your finger. You just reach down and just dot it out. And you covered a 12-inch, you know, piece of ground, and you just sit there and pick on ants that day. That's exactly what it looks like. You can't move. You can't do anything. And, yeah, they got caves. They got systems like that. We would bypass a lot of that stuff. We would target all their bunker systems. You know, we have bombs that actually have rockets on them. So they have a steel penetrator head. They come down at Mach, oh my God, they hit the ground. And then a booster rocket, just because the speed of the rocket pushing it to the ground doesn't work. Right when it hits, another rocket engages and pushes it further into the ground. I mean, and you don't have to penetrate the bunker. You just got to get close, and then it goes off, and everybody in the bunker dies of blast overpressure.
Right.
I mean, it's no fair.
So when you turn the map upside down and you say, okay, we're not going to look at the Korean Peninsula from south to north. When you turn around and look north to south and you say, okay, I've got to breach the DMZ in numbers, and then I've got to sustain. Mm-hmm. I've got to sustain those guys.
I got to take Seoul. I need Seoul intact, and I need civilian populace as my bargaining chip, because we're not going to bomb Seoul with the millions of people, innocents that live in there. So if I can get into Seoul, there's a bargaining chip. I go to the table with bargaining chip.
But I got to get there in numbers. I've got to get there in numbers.
I got to get there in big numbers, man.
And that's going to be, when you look at it as a tactical problem, his inability to own the sky, and he may own some of the sky, you know, north of the DMZ.
He owns it right now, but because we're not there.
Yeah, as soon as we decide that we own it, hold on.
Yeah, he just flipped the switch, man.
Yeah.
He flipped the switch.
Here's an email. Mac, could you explain to people some of the electronic warfare stuff that's going to happen to him as this thing gets going? I'm not an EW specialist, Mike. Mike probably more savvy.
I work with it. The EW piece, so they come. It's going to be a package. It's going to be a jamming package, you know, running. So it's going to jam all the electronic warfare, so microwave dishes or any kind of arrays that he has that can detect something coming, it's going to blind them. The other package is going to be is you can't any radio frequencies. The only thing that'll work will be a landline, ground laid, wire to wire system. Cell phone towers, HF, UHF, VHF will all be gone. All of that stuff gone. The only thing that he will rely on will be a ground laid wire networks. And we'll bomb that too. And people say, well, how do you know where those are?
We
because
know.
You lay them and there's like manhole covers, you know, so you got to have access points down to these fiber optic networks. And we know where those are at. So we'll just hit those hubs, knock those out too. So he'll even lose those. But he'll be blind. He's going to be trying to make a decision with earmuffs, a blindfold, and duct tape over his mouth. He's going to have to try and, you know, tell someone to do of what's going on in the room with him, in the dark, upside down.
Literally, does everybody remember what Saddam Hussein looked like when he got pulled out of the hole?
Yeah, that was only a few years, boys. He looked like he aged 50 years.
Remember that? Come here, motherfucker.
Could you imagine? So you would think, okay, so when United States of America unleashes its military on you, you are the guy.
Right.
Your aging process at that point, for every minute you are alive, you're aging one human year. Because think about this now. Not once you see on the TV, we're coming for you, boy, you're like, oh, dude, you can't even look outside your house. Because if they even see your silhouette in the mirror, you're gone.
Hey, you can't even look outside your hole.
Oh.
Okay.
The first thing that would happen is you got to move, man, because right when they announce it, there's a JDAM that's been released off of a jet that's falling right now.
Hey,
oh, shit. Martha, get everything and get outside.
That's looking for your cell phone that your driver is talking on right now.
Yeah.
That's what we're
looking
for.
And then you start recruiting. If you're smart, Kim El Joom or Oom or whatever his name is, has probably like 12 stunt doubles. It's like, okay, boys, time to earn your pay. And they're stupid enough to realize, oh, okay, well, you're not getting paid, jackass, because you're going to die. So your job is to go out there and build, you know, and be me. And then as soon as they're out there, SWAT, I mean, they're like, whoa, man, they're good. They're really serious. Yeah, that would be scary, man.
Yeah, the problem from his perspective is a difficult one, to say the least. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at, and again, I got to thinking about this because I read something that said he was extremely influenced in terms of his desire for nuclear weapons because of the way that Saddam Hussein's military, which is constructed very much like his is, was annihilated in largely a month by the American military. And it was with almost no American casualties. And that set him reinvigorated and his desire for nuclear weapons as the only way to preserve the gangster empire of North Korea. And which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, you could say, well, just negotiate. Well, if you believe that at some point the South Koreans are going to come across the border along with the Americans, and if that's what you believe, now, it might be a crazy notion, but if that's what you believe, then it is a rational act to go ahead and pursue nuclear weapons.
Oh.
If that's what you believe. So
I got to rewind this. Hang on. Go ahead. Because Nancy Pelosi just came on TV. I always record her shit. You never know what's going to come out of that weirdo.
Again, if you look at the problem in terms of American air power, and also much has been made about his ability to get his special forces, you know, out of the country into South Korea. You know, this is just my opinion. If it lifts off from anywhere in North Korea, I mean, it's going to get swatted. If it goes to sea out of North Korea, it's going to be, so maybe he will get some of those teams in, but my opinion is if they're not there now, his ability to move them, it's going to, you know, you're talking about onesies, twosies, small numbers, so be it.
Well, one other thing, too, that he's got to deal with that no other aggressor in the past has dealt with us is he's very isolated. He only shares two borders, one with South Korea and the other with China. So, and then he's surrounded on water on both sides. So his access points and his egress points are very, very limited. So if you look at Iraq, you know, Jordan, Syria, Iran, Saudi Arabia, I mean, they had plenty of neighbors. He had plenty of ways to infiltrate, exfil.
Right.
A lot of ways you can move. And move things around and shuffle things. You know, Afghanistan, just the same. Such Somalia, pick a country. Panama even had more than he did, more options than he did. But when you look at where he's at, yeah, he's isolated, especially if China steps away and kind of just, you know, closes the screen door and locks and closes the curtains. Doesn't want to see what's going on down the hallway or in the front street. And, you know, then he's really doubly screwed.
Yeah, so to me, he's. I was talking to Grant Newsham, and somebody sent an email that said that the email said he's running out of cards to play. If South Korea asks the United States to redeploy tactical nuclear weapons to the peninsula, what does he do? Is he going to shoot missiles at Guam, bracket Guam, or will he shoot them far enough away from Guam, but testing the range to Guam? And if he does so, I think most believe that the Americans will shoot those missiles down. What does he do after that?
Right.
What does he do after that? At some point, the next thing, Mike, according to the email, was conventional casualty stuff, like what he did sinking at South Korea destroyer or mine layer a couple years ago, and then shelling that South Korean island that's off, I want to say, the eastern coast, that it would be some kind of casualty-producing event, conventional type, that gets a lot of attention, but is controllable. But beyond that,
first problem with that question, though, is when you say, running out of cards to play, the problem is he's not playing cards. He's playing tic-tac-toe. We're playing cards. He just doesn't get it. That's the mindset I'm trying to set here is he's on a different plane of intelligence. I mean, I honestly believe that he has the intelligence of a mentally handicapped individual.
Okay, so let me ask this. Let me ask, because this came up as well, this issue. Okay, you had Muammar Gaddafi. You had Saddam.
Gaddafi was smart, though.
You had Saddam Hussein. Now, I do this little joke thing about Saddam Hussein where Uday and Kusei come to him and say, Dad, see these pictures? These are tanks being loaded on American ships that are coming here. We need to let the UN inspectors in because they're not going to come here and not come get us, right? They kicked our ass down in Kuwait. I mean, remember the highway to hell and all that? So this whole dictatorship gig, they're hard gigs to get. We've got one. Can we not drive it into the ditch, Dad? And so, Mike, at what point? So what was his response? They'll never come. Gaddafi overplayed his hand, too.
His thing was that we were going to do a buildup. We'll never come. It's all going to be a show of force. And I honestly believe, Mac, I really do believe, had Bush waited, Saddam Hussein would have get caved in. But, the good on Bush, he put a line in the sand and that was the line. I honestly think that he thought, they're never going to come. Omar Gaddafi, the same thing. I can live through the middle of the night bombings, because it'll never happen. A little different with Omar Gaddafi's situation where his own people are the one that ousted him, which he never saw coming because he was always looking. He used the analogy of he was always looking at the tree line. The problem was the shit that he had to deal with was on the porch. But the difference with the completely different scenario here with Bad Haircut Boy in Korea is, here is a person who grew up into that, assumed that upon his father's death, has total control. He's living his own reality of this is the way it is. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. I think we're dealing with someone that has a very low intelligence level. Again, probably something of an 8-year-old child that's running a country. And that is scary. Bad uncle. My uncle's bad. And then your Secret Service agents take that upon your act of, oh, he wants us to kill the uncle. Okay, execute. That's the problem with that kind of dictatorship. It's very disjointed, it's all over the place. You don't ever know what's going to come out of that place. That's scary. That's got to go.
Yeah, interesting.
And the two scenarios is that he can run is if he wants to go all out and just remembered for, either way, they both end in a regime change. Now, he doesn't understand that. He doesn't know what that means. Okay? So, again, don't try and be rational with the rational people. So, but either scenario is he can shoot this missile. I think you guys, everybody's painting, giving him too many kudos here that he can hit an island in the middle of the Pacific. Okay. I think he can hit the Pacific Ocean with the missile. Yes. I think he can achieve that. But to hit a postage stamp, you know, in the middle of that place, no, I don't think he can do it. Get close? Close doesn't count. Can he hit Japan? Maybe. Maybe. You know, but I think, you know, looking at kind of the stuff, the ballistics in his stuff and how he does is kind of reminiscent of the Germans in World War II. You know how the Germans bombed or did V2 rockets into London?
Right.
Angle. They knew that with this amount of fuel, the rocket will burn this long, right, attaining this much altitude. Right. And once it attains that much altitude, it'll fall to the ground and it'll come in the general vicinity of London. And they were right. So they would fill it up with X amount of fuel.
It was
4 gallons of gas, it missed its target.
It was a mortar. Mortar. It's a big intercontinental ballistic mortar.
Yeah. And that's what Korea's using theirs.
Right.
Ours are different, Mac. You know, if people don't understand the science of hitting another missile out of the sky with another missile, that is like intersecting a mosquito with a toothpick as it flies through the air. Give it a shot, boys and girls. You know, as that fly or that mosquito flies through the air, try and stab it with a toothpick. That's what we can do with these anti-ballistic missile systems. They're already shooting a mortar with jets. So again, I think we're giving them too much. Is he capable? Yeah. More than capable. But he's not dangerous.
The Mike Musselman giving us tactical, operational, and strategic opinions today. Again, I think even the subject of chemical weapons came up. Mike,
yeah.
How hard is it to get somebody a lethal dose of a chemical agent?
Oh, it's not hard at all, man.
How hard is it?
Just an agent, and then it's not hard at all.
But
I would say California is the most prone, you know.
Right, but I would say this: for you to give a military formation, for you to be able to fire enough of that kind of ordnance to have the atmospherics and the wind all be in your favor, and I'm not talking about a persistent agent, I'm talking about a non-persistent agent. It's chemical weapons aren't easy to engineer. I mean, World War II saw the only time they could use it, the wind had to be, you know, very, very low. Okay, they had to be able to shoot all this ordnance into a very small place to create a lethal dose. And so, so you hear these things thrown out. It's not easy to engineer doing it, and it has to be like
no. But you're talking about, when you talk about non-persistent agents, you're talking, you know, your blood, your choking,
right?
Your psychochemical type stuff, nerve agents, is all that. What I'm talking about is serum or something that is easy, readily available. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to actually. Serum gas is not. You could do that easy. You know, and just drop canisters somewhere. Put them somewhere away from you. And, you know, the prevailing winds 99% of the time in North Korea go from, you know, west to east.
But I'm talking about doing it on a large scale to have some kind of operational effect on the.
No, he doesn't want that though.
Yeah. So
he wants psychological effect.
Yeah, but
he wants the psychological effect.
We read this stuff and then when you actually get to the science of it and can he do it in the amount, it's hard. It's hard to do from his perspective. And again, here's another interesting email. You know, this is interesting because I don't hear too many people talking about the tactics of a conflict with North Korea. So I'm interested in this discussion. How much emphasis would we put on killing him from day one? Mike?
Oh, I think is we remove, this is one of those, we chop the head off the snake, there is no other snake. This is it. His country are so afraid of him that I think if he was gone, it would be kind of like when the house fell on the Wicked Witch of the West, right? And they were all kind of like shocked. They're like, oh, seeing the shoes sticking out. Like, right. But they didn't know what to do.
Right.
You know, they lived so long with the Wicked Witch of the West. They're like, oh my goodness. And then all of a sudden, it takes one other good fairy to come out and go, hey, you're all free. Whoa, party. Woo. And the game's on, man. The hors d'oeuvres come out, the champagne, everybody's climbing on the ceiling. You know? I think this is one of those situations, dude. You know, all they gotta do is see the boot sticking out underneath the house, and they're like, oh, Kim Il Jong is dead? You know? We can make a song about that. Like the Wicked.
I'm with you. It's for me.
You can visualize what I just said, right? Yeah, it makes sense.
For me, it's about that. And I would tell you, I don't know, you know, what goes on. I don't know the war plan. I don't know shit. Mike and I are just kind of bullshitting about this. But right now, every asset that we have that can be devoted to profiling him, locating him,
yeah.
Watching his business habits, what he does, where he goes, how he communicates is being done. And as Mike said, all in on that, because when the head gets chopped off, right, it's done.
Yeah, there is no other head to take its place on this one.
Right. And so but, I mean, the biggest problem would be convincing the biggest problem would be convincing the North Korean people that he's dead. He's dead.
Yeah.
No, he's like, not. The great leader, guys, there's no way. He's invincible. He's immortal. Yeah.
This is a trick for the great leader. You're testing me now. You're testing me. Great leader did this last year where he came in and said, oh, great leader's gone. And we were like, woo! And then they killed us. So I know this trick.
Remember Musselman that used to live over there? Yeah, he came out, got his grill out, did a little pork butt, made a little fresh bean dip, and was having a big party. We put his, like, his bad haircut helmet on and was prancing around. Yeah, he got shot in the head.
Yeah. Not only him, the whole family's gone. And then they leveled the house. And they put salt in the ground.
Exactly.
So yeah, I know this trick.
And then they fed him to the pigs and we all watched as they ate him. Yeah.
Yeah, the great leader. I watched a show where they were doing this. They had these doctors in there curing some kind of blindness. You know? And it was amazing to me how brainwashed these people are. You know, because they had the political people, you know, your political people are always kind of escorting you and making sure you're seeing what you need, that they need you to see. And, but it put the fear of God in these people, you know, these average people that were there, because they'd see these, and they were all over the place. You could tell how they're dressed, and they'd open up and they'd see for the first time. They're like, oh, start crying. And then they'd all made sure that they were brought over to the picture of the great leader. And they're like, oh, thank you, great leader, for giving me my eyesight back. Oh, great, thank you, great leader. You know, but you could see it in them that they were like, they're not doing it out of sincerity. They're doing it out of, you know, oh, the hammer's pulled back. Oh, great leader, oh, please.
You know what? It reminds me of
the falling empty cylinder. Yeah.
Remember the religious programs you'd see, and like the person would show up and then you, like, Jerry Falwell would start crying and help ask God the cure of her paralysis, and all of a sudden she stands up, and you're going, what just happened on my TV? What? Exactly. Yeah. Do that again. What?
What?
Exactly. That's, except the great leader's doing it now. So I agree. Yeah. That's the biggest problem, is convincing him. No, you can come out. All y'all come free. Yeah, nobody moved. For 6 months.
The greatest imitation of, and it was his father, was in, what's that puppet movie?
What puppet movie?
About the movie with the marionette puppets.
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't. What are you talking about?
They go and they God dang. It's the marionette puppets, and they're like all like secret agents, and they go kill a bunch of people.
Okay,
and,
I don't know. I don't know. Whatever crazy shit you're talking about.
Okay, Rob, if Rob's listening, or Rudy, because they would be right in here. Rudy's probably cracking up thinking of all the lines that he could probably say right now out of this movie. It's like one of the most quoted movies in the world, man. I mean, all the little snippet quotes. But they're marionette puppets, and there's a scene in there with Kim L. Jung or his dad. And, oh, dude, that is hilarious. That's exactly what would happen there.
Hilarious. Another question.
I'm telling you, the marionette puppets.
Another question. I read an article the other day that talked about SEAL Team 6 and Delta Force right now being inside of South Korea practicing for the big hit.
Okay.
My instinct is that there's active targets in other parts of the world that those guys might be servicing right now, but I would imagine there's elements.
My guess is that they're not there, and if they are there, they probably got like one dude who's probably there as a, you know, kind of advisor.
He's a guy on light duty. So he's going over there as the LNO, and he's there with a PAO saying, yep, we're here, Delta Force, here's my car.
Call me. We'll be in touch.
What are you here for? No comment. We're tracking people. That's what we do. Cue the Mission Impossible music. But, that's the whole game. Kill him and it's over. Where does he hide? And all you need.
I'm still trying to figure out that marionette puppet movie.
Yeah, I don't need. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Something World Police or something like that, right?
I have no idea.
I'm telling you, man.
Who watches, like, movies with, like, marionettes in it?
Just about every Marine that I know.
I have no idea. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Dude, used to watch that. Oh,
I
Team America.
What?
Dude, are you serious? You don't know Team America, World Police?
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch one movie in Afghanistan. I was grounded.
Are you telling me? You're telling me right now on the news, on this live air, that you never saw Team America, World Police?
Never saw it. Does that make me a bad person?
You're going to get some hate email in a second here. I'd hate to be you right now.
Why? Nobody watched that movie. Team America?
Really?
Team America World Police?
Yes, sir. And then if you look at the one that has Kim Il-jung in it, or the clip.
Kim Jong-un?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right here. Team America, Kim Jong-il. And then Kim Il-jung in the Team America. Oh, my God. That's so funny, dude. So damn funny.
I never saw that movie. Never saw the movie.
Oh, my God. Dude, Mac, you got to watch it. Because you, with your humor, like, I know your humor. There wouldn't be a moment in that movie that you wouldn't be laughing. You wouldn't be able to talk because you'd be laughing.
Really?
And it wouldn't be like a roaring laughing, like a crying laughing. It would be like a slow rolling chuckle laughing the whole way. But you would get the humor because of the shit you've done, the thing you've seen. They make fun of like the overdoing it of America. You know, that America always like overdoes it. Like, well, here, you know, it's just, the scenes in there are hysterical. Hysterical.
All right, here's another email. Mac, does the Gunner have a problem with the president making a deal with the Democrats?
Mm-mm. No, that's what I expect him to be. He's a deal maker, man. To move the ball forward, you got to make a deal. You can't sit there and say, no. Nope, we're not doing it that way.
Yeah, that's what I said a little bit ago. Okay, so I'm going to saddle my train to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, who haven't delivered anything.
Yeah.
And probably won't deliver anything. Now, what I want to do is I want to come here and I want to shake it up. I want to make people uncomfortable. I want to call them out. I want to go to their states when they're running for re-election and say, don't vote for this person because they didn't help.
You know,
that's him.
He's got to do more of the kill him with kindness stuff. Take always, you know, the easiest thing to do if you're going to deal with Congress or Senate, and this is take the moral high ground. Because you know why? They're so low that you could be standing on a stool in your thousands of feet above them when it comes to like the moral high ground. I mean, it doesn't take much to maintain moral high ground with a congressman or a senator. So that's why I say just maintain the moral high ground, emphasize that position. You know, that's what they need to do. They need to bring Fox News in there when they have a meeting with Mitch McConnell and all these other guys, when they're asking the real hard questions like, hey, Mitch, I'm here to make a deal with you. I don't want a deal, Mr. President. Yeah, but this is what, whatever, you know, the good of America. Well, basically what they wanted to get him to say is, screw America.
Yeah, on my terms. You know, it'll be, Mike, I'll tell you what, I saw this classic,
no terms at all.
I saw this classic audio cut from a Republican senator, and he said this. He said, well, just historically, when you negotiate with the Democrats, it doesn't turn out well. Isn't that politics? Isn't it supposed to be like not well for you and not well for them, and that's how you make a deal? Have we forgotten?
Yeah,
that?
It's got to be somewhere down the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want a good deal? You want the Republican deal? Well, guess what, bro? You don't have the votes. So as opposed to doing nothing, isn't it better to get part of it? And so, but the it's like we've forgotten that
understand.
Piece. And so that's why, look, I don't care. Donald Trump, Mike and I, we were talking about this during the election. There's not one thing he said during the election that he will not come off. Not one thing. Whether it's the border, wall, and he said, well, you know, a wall in some places, blah, 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 blah. And then you say, no, a wall. Like, yeah, that's not the way that goes, okay? Better security means certain part of the border that are highly trafficked. We have to use other means. Now, sometimes it'll be a fence, other times cameras. You know, we have to have response time, yada, yada, yada. You know, that makes sense to people that understand how you try to secure something. Building a wall was a euphemism. It was a figure of speech. Okay. It wasn't a physical promise, but you have the people that dropped on your head at birth crew.
Yeah.
You know, and again, the whole dreamer thing, you know, the hysteria because of that. Look, Barack Obama on June 15th, 2012. Over 5 years ago, issued that executive order. Okay? I don't think there's too many people I know that think what he did was wrong other than overstepping his bounds and doing something that Congress should have done, which is remedy the legal status of an estimated between 11 and 12 million people in this country.
Okay? Yeah. The Congress hasn't done shit.
And so
5 years later,
five plus
still
years,
haven't done anything.
And so what he did was he dumped the charcoal in their lap, and he said, "Here you go, boys and girls, deal with this." All right, because
Trump. Yeah, I don't get it.
Now
everybody's upset with Trump.
Now he's a racist.
No, everybody's upset with Trump. Yeah, you're like, no, idiots. But see, this is how these people become empowered. It's the useful idiots, phenomenon.
Right.
The problem in America right now is we have too many useful idiots. We really do, Mac. Educated, PhD, master's doesn't mean shit. Just means that you're dedicated. You've been to school. Good on you. You had the opportunity. Doesn't mean you're smart, idiot. Because most of those people are the useful idiots in America. They just have a tagline and they're on board, man. And then anything else that bombards them with facts, nope. I was told this is the way it is, so that's got to be the way it is. No, I'm telling you. Look, nope. Well, you won't take this in consideration? Nope. But you're a PhD professor? Nope. Nope. Yeah, I mean, I'm like, because, again, we're trying to rationalize irrational behavior.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. It's a discussion I have with my wife all the time. You know, she's always like, I'm so mad at these people and this person and that person. And I look at her and I listen to her and she's done and she looks at me and I'm like, and I look back at the TV and she goes, you're not going to say anything?
And I look back at her and go, oh, yeah, I'm mad with you. I'm mad. Okay? We're good? You know? And then she looks at me and goes, why do you got to be an asshole? And I'm like, I'm not. You know, and then we get into this thing, and she goes, well, what do you think? And I said, I don't think. What do you mean? Because you're trying to rationalize irrational people. I don't do that. I did that for 31 years. I don't do that anymore. I don't want to do it. Because in the end of it, you sit there and you're like, ah, and you go to bed angry, and then what happens is you wake up going, ah, I'm still angry. Why? Because there's irrational people I got to deal with. Ah, instead of come to terms and go, that person's stupid. Okay. All right. Got it. So don't try and do difficult things with that person. You know, don't expect more than him breathing in air and breathing out CO2. That's all his job is. Okay, I got that. You know, okay, I can deal with that. But when people are like, I expect more from this person, okay.
Set yourself up.
Remember, Mac, I tell you, what's Gunner's rules on staying calm and living a long, prosperous life? When you walk out the door, expect 0.0% from other people. And when you walk in and someone opens the door and you see an act of kindness, you're like, wow. I'm floored. I'm like, but the problem is we go out expecting what we would possibly do. Well, the world's not full of Gunners or Mac McNamara's, and thank God for that.
What do you mean? But
because then the world would be too awesome.
It would be heaven.
Way too awesome.
It would be heaven. It would be the world to be heaven. And by definition,
we'd have to go colonize another world and make that one bad because this one would be too awesome. But anyway,
yeah, you'd have a whole bunch of cool people rolling around doing cool stuff.
People go out the door expecting what they expect. With the expectations like, I expect to have no congestion on the way to work today. Well, idiot, stay at home then.
Yeah, good idea.
Because you're going to run into it. And then when you run into it, you see the people like, shit, why is there so much traffic on this freeway? Okay. Really? Do you want the answer to that? Or are you just vetting? Because if you're vetting, that's just as stupid as well. Because why? Why even give it a thought? Why waste a brain cell?
I had again, this is the whole thing about common sense, right? I had a conversation with a lieutenant, recently, and I won't name him, it wasn't my son. He's giving me a scenario in that they were aboard ship and they were shooting, I believe off the fantail, or they were shooting off the ship. So they got this, you know, he's RSO in the thing. It's his platoon. You know, his platoon sergeant's running the line. They've got squad leaders doing this. And evidently in the first division now, you're not supposed to have your blouse tucked in to your pants, during tactical events. Okay.
Because brass can go down and get your jimmy.
The company commander's standing there during the shoot, and everything goes fine. He leaves, and then the first sergeant comes back. And he gets all the NCOs together with the platoon sergeant kind of standing outside the group, and he chews their ass because two guys had their blouses tucked in. And so,
holy shit!
So the question to me was, why didn't he just say something to me so I could say something to my platoon sergeant, who's young but good and trying hard? Why wouldn't he do that? And I said,
because it's a hard ass.
Because he's stupid.
Syndrome.
He's stupid.
Yeah, I want to be the hard ass. I want to be the tough guy. And then, you know, when you said that, apparently in the 1st Marine Division, you can't have blouses tucked into your trousers anymore, right?
Right.
First thing on my mind, guess what it was?
What?
A new division sergeant major has nothing better to do.
He Except implement
stupid
rules.
That's exactly what it is, brother. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. New Division Star Major running around. Because you know why? Here's my why I say the Division Star Major. People are like, no, well, you know, Governor, why are you so hard on him? Because the general, I know the general. I know the general real well. Actually, just got the phone with him just a couple of days ago. And if I brought it up to him just in argument's sake and said, hey, blank, blank, I'm not bad word, but I'm not going to use his name. And, but hey, I heard that you passed a rule saying no blouses and trousers. You know what he'd say to me? Mike, come on. Seriously. I put my blouse in my trousers because I know he does. But it doesn't matter to him because he's trying to make, you know, his guy probably made a thing out in public and said, oh, I'm sick and tired of seeing that. I don't want to see it anymore without anybody else. So you got to back him up, right? Say, all right, no more blouses and trousers. Division order number 6. But the general wouldn't care. You know, hell, my old boss.
Why would
you do it?
Why? Who cares? What is there? What?
That's
would be,
my point.
What would be because, the reason? I mean, honestly, I mean, when
because
we were,
those guys are paid to care, though, that's the problem because they
care about
the E8s and E9s, and I'm not picking on all of them.
Yeah, you are.
But you know. I'm not a big fan of a lot of them.
Yeah,
is they were the guys that you delegated the non-mission type, like, go figure out something like doesn't pertain to anything and fix it. Because that's what they were good at. Like haircuts.
Wait,
you know?
Wait, say that again. Go figure out something that doesn't have anything to do with anything and fix it? Is that what you just said?
Yeah. They were really good at that.
Yeah, like
you could see that.
Like the mix
like
of
haircut.
Like the mix of people coming to the Toby Keith concert. All right. What units get how many seats? All right. And how do they break down? Yeah. All
right. Right.
You take care of that.
Yeah. That's their job. Yeah. Exactly. And how they're gonna file in.
Yeah.
I want it in an orderly manner.
And
everybody's gonna enter from.
And there's going to be a lot of press with them, so we need X number of guys. This is, hold on. Stand by and listen to Mike's reaction to this. We need X number of guys. We need X number of females. All right? And you need to have their questions already rehearsed. Okay? For the Q&A, right?
Yeah, you're right, so, Mac. That's the way they were. And it used to drive me absolutely crazy. So, you know, because that's why I was an ass to a lot of them. You know, because when they would come up and go, Garner, you know, you're wearing non-military standard issued sunglasses. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, were those issued? No. My car wasn't issued, but I drive home in that. So what's your point? So you'd look at me and go, well, your sunglasses are not issued. Okay, but again, my car's not issued. I can't drive that anymore. I didn't know is there a list of what cars are, you know, I'm supposed to buy from?
No, but there's a list of gear that's allowed and not allowed.
And he says, well, and I said, they're black. They're not mirrored. They don't stand out in any other way. They look just like everything else. They're just, they're different. And by the way, they were procured with government money. And he's like, oh, how so? My fucking paycheck, idiot. How do you think I'm paid?
You can see, you can see how this shit goes. What's the reason not to tuck your blouse into your trousers? Because when we had, you know, when as we stayed in hot parts of the world, all right, and we evolved our clothing to essentially be a t-shirt with camouflage sleeves on it, right? Those all got tucked in. Everybody had their shirt tucked in. So what's the point of not tucking your blouse in?
The point is, why does it matter? And that's my point. Is because if it's non-mission essential, assign it to that guy. He'll take care of it. Because you think about it, that's their job. They got to march in a neat manner and carry the flag this way, and they got because it's non-mission essential. We're not a good Marine Corps because we march really good.
No, we are though. It's the discipline.
No,
stuff
we're
like
a great
that.
Marine Corps because we fight really well.
Stuff like that, the discipline that you don't want to pay attention to, that holds it all together.
We kick our enemies' asses. Not we out-march them. We out-drill them. We out-field bay them. We do better vehicle inspections on a Friday prior to a 96 than they do.
Hold on. You know? Email. Hey, Mac, I have a question. Does Gunner consider Nancy Pelosi a master legislator? Do you?
I think I wasn't drinking it, and you would have heard, what?
What? Oh, God. I'm gearing up on that one.
And then it goes on.
I heard her say
that when she was asked whether she would be giving up her position as Speaker of the House after the last election defeat. She said, of course not. I'm a master legislator. I bring incredible professionalism and skills to the Speaker position. Boom.
You know why?
There you have it.
She wears her hair the way she does?
No, why?
Because she's got little mini earbuds that have two people talking to her all times, telling her who the fuck she is and where she's at in the world. Because that chick is so disillusioned. She's so screwed up. She doesn't even know who she is. I mean, you watch her talk. She's speaking in fragmented sentences because people are talking to her saying, nope, stay on message, Nancy. Nope. Because she's, in most, things, she's like, I one day I'm waiting for her to go, you know, like, come out of some kind of state and go, where am I? Who am I? Who are you?
Oh, man.
Oh. Yeah, because we can't find someone as crazy to replace her yet. You need crazy. Like, you know, her district is crazy. And she's a Catholic, you know, but
be very careful. Be very careful now.
But look at the things that she backed.
You're a Catholic.
No, I was.
You still are.
Get me started on that.
You can't resign.
I got upset with that.
You can't.
Yeah,
resign.
I did.
No,
I wrote a letter.
No, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
I wrote a letter.
Sorry.
Filed in the Vatican City.
You can check out anytime you like. You can never leave. Sorry. Ain't happening. It's kind of like you being a Viking fan. Okay, you're never going to be a Cowboy fan. They won't accept you. You know it.
No, you know you're right. I mean, I like the Vikings. The Cowboys accept. You know why? Because it's propaganda for them. They're like, yeah, we got another Viking fan. But no, I mean, I wish the Vikings well. And
no, it doesn't. You
this
can't.
Year they win the Super Bowl, which they're not.
You can't.
But if they did,
you can't.
I'd secretly, quietly, be like, yes. But if I said that out front, my wife would level me, man. She'd say the same thing you're doing. You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Not allowed.
It doesn't work like that.
I'm like, you know what? I could do whatever I want. That's what the NFL does. What do you think?
Hold on. I got one other email for you. Mac, so far, no discussion of the cheating scandal involving the Red Sox. Yeah, what do you have to say about that? I forgot to bring that up. What the hell?
Okay, first of all,
yes,
this has already been adjudicated in the court of law? Or are we just going off what the media has already...
It hasn't been adjudicated in court of law.
Okay, so how do we say it's a cheating scandal if we're... Oh, so you're guilty?
Yes.
This is America.
No, the Red Sox admitted.
The land of the free.
The Red Sox admitted they did it.
Not yet.
No, they did. They said, yeah, we did that.
No, they kind of, that's not the way they said it.
That's what they said.
This is America. America. Okay? The land of the free. The home of the brave.
The home of the cheaters up in New England.
No.
Unbelievable.
We're not talking about cheating. We're talking about the land. So you're saying that we as Americans are cheaters.
No, I'm saying the Boston Red Sox are self-admitted cheaters.
If you're calling the Red Sox cheaters, you're calling all of us cheaters.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
You're thumbing your nose at the judicial system. You're not giving their day in court.
This is the scene out of Animal House, right? When they walk out of the suspension hearing with Dean Wormer. I should play that. I should play that with the music. I'm an American. And if you could, you know what? I was talking to Gret Newsom, and he said this. He said, you know, I asked him about somebody sent an email about taking down statues. What was his opinion of it all? He said, well, you know, if we're going to do it, I mean, don't you think one of the biggest racists in the United States in the 20th century was Franklin Roosevelt? He incarcerated virtually the entire Japanese population on the West Coast and imprisoned them.
Yes.
Don't you think we should start taking his stuff down? I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Again, don't stop. I told you, go after Huntington. Go after all the things that are named in California.
Yeah. Stanford.
Yeah.
Come on.
Stanford. Look, go do a Google check on who Stanford was and what he did.
And Google the term robber baron.
Yeah. And all you little millennial bleeding heart snowflakes going to Stanford. That's...
You're supporting that. You're accepting money from that. Yeah. All right. What else you got going on today?
This is America. Yeah, you need to play the Dean Wormer thing. And you also need to watch Team America World Police. I cannot believe you haven't seen that.
When am I? I couldn't. The last movie I watched, what was it? I couldn't even tell you the last time I watched a movie. What was the last movie you watched?
I just watched. Hey, Megan, what movie did I just watch? What movie did I just watch? Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman. Was it any good?
With Gal Gadot?
Who?
Gal Gadot. The actress plays Wonder Woman. Gal Gadot. It was really good, Mac. And I said to my daughter, no, 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 no. And I watched it. It was like...
Wonder Woman.
The best... Yeah, one of the best movies I've seen this year.
All right.
Really good.
Well, I'll go see Wonder. I'll take Colleen. We'll go see Wonder Woman.
I mean, it's that, you know, superhero type thing, but it's cool. I mean, it's really good. I think they could have picked a better actor for the pilot guy who played the actor for the pilot? But he's the more popular guy actor right now, who I'm not a big fan of.
Doesn't Megan know?
I think she's looking right now, but. He's not really good.
Tell Megan,
but I'll tell you,
come on, what are we paying Megan for? Hold on, here's an email. Hey, Mac, God damn it, why do Marines unblouse their blouses? I wore mine bloused in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we were supposed to. Now it's a rule you can't do it? What the hell? Who makes up this shit?
Didn't you just listen to my segment?
But why, Mike? Why? What you're saying is there is no reason? Somebody's just made up a rule?
Hey, people that have no relevance have to be given something. So they're given tasks to go find something that's non-mission essential and fix it. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that's how we get those dumb rules. B, don't argue with irrational behavior. If you're a rational person, it'll drive you insane. So just accept the fact that there are stupid people living among us, and there's nothing you can do about it, and you accept them for who they are. They're just stupid people. They're born that way. You can't fix it. You can't do anything about it. But once you go down the rabbit hole of, like, remember I told you, Mom said a long time ago, once you argue with an idiot, who's the bigger idiot?
Your mom hit that one on the screws.
Yeah. Once you argue with an idiot, who is the bigger idiot? If you know, man, this guy's an idiot, but I'm going to argue with him.
Megan's sitting over there rolling her eyes. Not that one again.
Let me get some pop. Yeah. Let me get, she knows that. Meg, what's one of my quotes about arguing with an idiot? Oh, that's the other one, too.
What's that?
As she said on that one was, if you play stupid games, expect to win stupid prizes. Because when I said that to her, she goes, oh, that's easy. That's if you play stupid games, you get stupid prizes. And I said, oh, well, that's close enough. She's charted. She knows what's going on.
Our kids, they know all the quotes. They could say, wow. All right. I'm done.
And so her philosophy teacher, well, real quick.
Yeah.
So her philosophy teacher kicks off the class with that kind of quote. And she looks and rolls her eyes and is like, oh, God, I'm going to have a class by my dad.
That's awesome. All right. I'm out of here. Have a good one.
Yep, Dr. Ryan.
All right. There you have it. Mike Musselman, Chatty Cathy today. Some days he likes to play, some days he doesn't. Today we just get out of his way. All right, that'll do it on a Thursday. Interesting show, the tactical problem for the North Koreans. Not easy. My thanks to Grant Newsham for coming on today. My thanks to Mike Musselman for coming on today. My thanks to for people that email the program. One of the cool things about this show is the number of smart people that ask smart questions. I'll close with this email. God damn it, I never got an answer. Why can't we tuck in our blouses? I don't think there's a good reason. Yeah. As we got better at clothing, you know, you didn't wear a t-shirt. You didn't wear a t-shirt, your blouse, and then your flak jacket. You wore fire retardant stuff. All right, and what that was, it was a fire retardant shirt with a collar, and it was a camouflage collar, but it was a small collar, and it zipped up the front from like mid sternum to the neck. But it had normal camouflage sleeves on the sides, so that looked normal. And so if you saw a Marine, you know, you'd think he was, you know, he had his blouse on, but he doesn't. Yeah. So, yeah, and that was tucked in. Now, get where it tucked in. I don't know. And then if you look at any two pictures in World War II, do you think you find Marines dressed alike? Not even close. Not even close. Yeah, how we came out with the uniformity thing from World War II, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I understand why we teach it, but look at pictures of World War II. There's not two dudes wearing the same uniform in the whole movie. Anyway, interesting. All right, thanks for listening. All Marine Radio repeats itself right now. So don't touch that dial. Why do we tuck our blouses in? Yeah, got to. One more email about that. You know, he never did answer your question, Mac. Your question was, why wouldn't the company commander just go to the platoon commander and say, hey, those guys need to tuck their blouses in? Obviously, he and the platoon sergeant have other more important things to do that day, making sure the chute's organized well, range safety, all that kind of stuff, making sure that the bridge is notified when they intend to go hot, blah, 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 blah. And so somebody that's not involved in anything notices that somebody hasn't polished their boots. I think at that point you contribute to good order and discipline within the organization by informing the chain of command and let them do their thing. Sounds ridiculous to me. And moderately unprofessional. Boom. All right, this program repeats itself. So let me tell you, interesting show today. Have a great afternoon. Program repeats itself immediately on a Thursday. All Marine Radio. Out.